he may contain. He urged to run away, but hold her down with soggy clothes and breeze blocks. Cetirizine, your fevers greet me again. Never kisses, or do you ever send a full stop? Do you know where the waffing's?
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Rebel Room. I am Las Vegas Sun UNLV reporter Taylor Byrne, and on the other line, coming to us all the way from New York, possibly at his beachfront property, we have CBSSports.com writer and creator of Busting the Bracket, Jeff Borzello. Jeff, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me on.
You can follow Jeff on Twitter at Jeff Borzello, B-O-R-Z-E-L-L-O. I have to say, he's somebody who, if you're a UNLV fan, you probably ought to have been aware of from the start, because on the CBSSports.com preseason predictions, he was actually one of two. He and Matt Norlander both had UNLV in the Final Four, and Jeff actually had Anthony Bennett as the Freshman of the Year, and I believe up until just this most recent week in his weekly Freshman of the Year rankings, had him towards the top. So he's been on the Bennett train for a long time. So I'll start with that, Jeff. Since you know, kind of had him towards the top of this this list of freshmen since the start, are you surprised at all by anything he has done this year, or is this just sort of what you expected out of him?
Well, I mean, I did pick him to win the Freshman of the Year, but even what he's done, I've been surprised at. He's just been dominant from day one. I mean, I didn't expect him to be averaging 20 and, you know, about, well, 17 and 8, but, you know, pretty much getting 20 and 10 every night. And I didn't expect that. I know he's talented, he can do a lot of things offensively, but I didn't expect him to be, you know, this dominant performer that nobody could really stop. I mean, he's a matchup nightmare, and he's played himself into the NBA draft lottery, and that's something I didn't see coming.
Yeah, and he's looking at basically top five, top ten from, you know, everything I've seen, everything I've heard, which I agree. I mean, I think he was like a fringe first rounder before he started the year, and I think everybody around here anyway was expecting him to jump as long as something didn't go awry. And so for the fact that it to go this well, I think, and you're a, you know, kind of a recruiting specialist at CBS. I think long term, having Bennett come here for just 1 year and then go as a lottery pick, and that's got to be a great selling point in the future, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think just the talent that you know, Dave Rice is getting there. You have Anthony Bennett. You got Ken Burch from Pittsburgh. He was a former top 10, top 15. Caden Ryhart was a top 30, top 40 guy. I mean, Bryce DeJean Jones. He was another, you know, highly rated recruit coming out of high school, Savon Goodman. All these guys were, you know, good, big-time recruits coming out of high school, and they're going from, and they're, it's not coming from just the West Coast. You know, they're getting guys from the East Coast. Savon Goodman's from Philadelphia, and he's coming out West. Ken Burch is coming from Canada. Anthony Bennett coming from Canada. So I just think the talent that he's getting, elite prospects around the country are seeing that and saying, okay, you know, maybe I'll leave my home state, and I don't have to go to Kentucky or Florida or somebody like that. I can go to UNLV. I'll get playing time. They play in a fun system. And, you know, they're becoming one of the, you know, destination spots for elite recruits.
I think that talent is what everybody has seen, you know, from the beginning. It's why they were picked essentially to win the league. Them and San Diego State were right there. And, of course, the way it's playing out, good old New Mexico and Steve Alford is just going to go and wrap the thing up with three games to go, essentially. And do you think that it's just the reason, maybe with UNLV specifically, that it hasn't come together as much as they would like? Is that just the challenge of having so many new pieces, or are you one of the many that would criticize either Dave Rice or individual players who just haven't you know, kind of shouldered the responsibility that they need to at this stage of the season?
Well, I think there's a few things that have, I guess, been cropped up at times and been a problem. I mean, you know, it's in non-conference season. We saw them a little bit inconsistent with their effort defensively. We saw them inconsistent taking care of the ball and running an offense. And those are still rearing their heads at times. And, you know, when Mike Moser, he had the injury and came back and he wasn't getting the minutes, and he's only playing about 14, 17 minutes a game the past few games. So all those problems have been a factor. But the bottom line is, you know, they're still going to be a 5, maybe a 6 seed, you know, come the NCAA tournament. And they have as much talent as anybody in the country. I think it's starting to come together a little bit if they all stay healthy. You know, the chemistry is there. I think they're starting to play better defensively, and they're more cohesive offensively. I just think they're going to go into March with, you know, some momentum, and I just think whoever they take on, whoever they're matched up with, they'll have as much talent or more talent than, you know, who they're playing against.
So you mentioned possibly a 5 or 6 seed on your site, Busting the Bracket. You've got them as the third number 5. I think Lenardi's got a 5, Palm's got a 5, and Glockner has them at a 6. Is that the ceiling right now, a 5? Let's play a couple hypotheticals, and obviously it depends entirely on what other teams do and all that, so nobody's like holding you to these. But if they were to win their last 3 regular season games at Reno, home against Boise State and Fresno State, and then win the Mountain West tournament, are they still looking at, you know, 5 as the ceiling, or could they sneak into a 4?
I think they can sneak into a 4. I mean, obviously it depends on what other teams do, but their resume, yeah, when I went to the NCAA mock selection exercise a couple of weeks ago in Indianapolis, I was the one kind of, I guess, pushing the UNLV wagon. I thought they had a pretty good resume, and I thought maybe I was missing something because not everyone was as high on them. And I guess, you know, at the time, they didn't have the road wins. They didn't have the 2 wins that they have for Colorado State and San Diego State, the 2 wins that in the past couple of weeks. So at the time, I could see people knocking them down to maybe an 8 or a 9. But right now, I mean, they have 5 top 50 wins. They have 12 top 100 wins. That road neutral record is 5-6. It's not as bad as people think. They just got the win over Wyoming on the road in a blowout. And their, you know, computer numbers are great, RPI strength of schedule. So right now, I think 5 is, you know, a good spot for them. And if they win the Mountain West tournament, they're going to end up with, you know, 16 top 100 wins. And with all the momentum they're having, if they're going to win their last 3 regular season games, that's going to be, you know, 9 wins in a row heading into the tournament. It might be hard to keep them out of a 4. And depending on what happens, maybe the last 3 line, you know, if all this plays out and they do win their final 3 games and the Mountain West tournament.
Man, I personally, I don't think there's any way they work their way into the 3, but that's partly also just because I think no matter what UNLV seems to be slotted at, with the exception of last year, there was like a streak of like 3 or 4 years where if it looked like a 7, they were an 8. If it looked like an 8, they were a 9, something like that. Like, I think, of course, you know, they'd take anything 5 or above with the way that they had that kind of swoon in the beginning of conference season. I'm curious, at that mock selection committee, what did they kind of rate as like the most important things? One thing I think I saw on Twitter was that they really, really put a lot of value into road wins. Was that accurate, or, you know, is RPI matter more? Just kind of what were the main things that people were looking at?
And people were looking at, they were looking at the road neutral record and seeing who they beat on the road. You know, Missouri, they've only won 1 true road game, so that kind of irks people a little bit. But yeah, and UNLV at the time, I think they were 3-6 on the road or something like that. So people weren't high on that road record. But above all else, it seemed like people were, you know, weighing good wins. You know, who have you beaten that's good? I mean, that was weighed way more than a bad loss. So, you know, beating New Mexico obviously is going to be more important than losing at Fresno State at the beginning of February. And they do have those solid wins. They have New Mexico. They have Colorado State. They swept San Diego State. They won at Cal, which is looking better and better. So, you know, they have those good wins that are going to come in handy. You know, when it comes to seeding time, you know, if you compare them to the other potential 5 seeds, you know, Ohio State, Oklahoma State, Butler, Pittsburgh, you know, their resume doesn't compare that favorably right now. If they were to win the Mountain West tournament, they're going to have, you know, 7 or 8 top 50 wins and, you know, a long list of pretty good wins, a couple wins over New Mexico, who's the RPI loves. So, you know, UNLV could end up with a top 10 or 12 RPI, which would be, you know, look really good to the committee.
So you're saying like the winning at home against New Mexico and Colorado State wipes away like the Fresno State loss on the road?
Yeah, I think it comes down to it, if they're comparing them to, you know, another team for the 5 seed or a 6 seed or whatever it ends up being, they're going to look at UNLV's 5 top 50 wins more than they're going to look at the Fresno State loss. When it comes down to it, you know, if they're going against a team that's won 2 top 50 games or something like that, maybe Oklahoma, you know, they're going to say, okay, they got the 5 wins. They've proven they could beat NCAA tournament competition. You know, maybe Oklahoma doesn't have a bad loss, but it's just going to look better to have those good, meaty wins at the top of the resume.
Dave versus Lon Kruger. I'm sure fans would not be happy if UNLV was matched up with that and lost that comparison. Of course, for a while, I think one of the projections I saw was a 7-seed Oklahoma playing 10-seed UNLV in Kansas City or something, which I just thought I was really hoping something like that wouldn't happen. That'd just be a disaster.
But But those would be fun storylines.
It would, but as we know, the committee does not care about storylines. They would never put things like that together.
They just don't have time. I mean, I kind of was not a conspiracy theorist, but I'm saying, all right, if you're sitting there with 2 hours left and you see a potential juicy matchup, you maybe switch something around. But, you know, even when we thought about doing it, maybe like a Tubby Smith against Kentucky or something like that, or Tubby Smith in Lexington, it takes a lot of work to kind of move those games around and make something like that happen.
It's always interesting. And actually, although maybe if it was the Norlander year, they would have had time for that. Because I believe listening to Jeff on the CBSSports.com Eye on College Basketball podcast, which I recommend to everyone, is a fun listen. Apparently, Norlander last year was way more efficient than you guys were this year.
Yeah, that's what everyone said. They said that we were this slow group. I mean, they had to seed like 6 lines for us. I don't know. I guess maybe we had, you know, better discussion debate than other years. That's what I'm going to say, at least. We had better and more in-depth debates than other previous mock committees.
There you go. Just stick with that story. That works. And if we're, and we talked about what the potential, you know, high point is for UNLV. I'm still not sold that this team is going to be able to win on the road now just because they beat Leonard Washington-less Wyoming. So let's say they lose at Reno, which is Saturday, then win those last two home games. And then, you know, if they lose in the, like, win one and then lose one in the Mountain West tournament. So they'd finish 3-2, basically. Would that potentially put them in, like, the 6-7 range, do you think?
I think so. I think the 7 might be, you know, as low as they can go. Even if they lose 2 games down the stretch, I just think that having those good wins, they're going to compare pretty favorably to a Memphis or another team that might be in line for that 8 seed, a Memphis or a State. They just have better wins than those teams, and they have better competition than those teams. Speaking of bracket this year, there's kind of a little bit of a drop-off from the 7s to the 8s in that area. Then you get kind of towards the whole team. So I think UNLV is comfortably ahead of that call.
And does the fact that the Mountain West is like number 2 RPI or number 3 RPI in a lot of different rankings, how much is that factored in if you're looking at not necessarily UNLV in the seeding, but just like sneaking in a fifth team like a, you know, Boise State or Air Force, the only teams that basically have even a prayer at this point? Like, is that something that they would have a better chance just because of the league's overall record and standing this year, do you think?
No, I mean, the committee doesn't look confident. When you put up the 2 team teams, it's Boise State versus, you know, Ole Miss. You're just looking at the numbers and you're not looking at the conference. So in that sense, you're not, you know, having the Mountain West first or second or whatever in the RPI wouldn't play a factor. Where it will play a factor is that because they have that really high RPI as a conference, you're looking at teams with, you know, the individual teams have good resumes, UNLV, New Mexico, Colorado State, San Diego State. So it gives Boise State or a team like that a chance to accumulate these good wins, especially a team like Boise State who has 3 of these type of teams toward the end of the regular season. So when it comes down to it, you're not trying to fill out, you know, 5 bids from the Mountain West, but having a good conference RPI means that those individual teams at the top of the league have better looking resumes.
All right, we'll get you out of here on this. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, you had UNLV in the Final Four before the season. Your other teams were Missouri, Louisville, and Indiana. You know, if you had to redo it right now before you can see the bracket, because obviously you couldn't back in October either, would you stick with any of those 4 teams?
I would still stick with Indiana. I think I would still stick with Louisville. You know, the other 2 teams, if Ryan Kelly comes back, I'd probably go Duke. And that 4th team is completely up in the air. But I don't think UNLV is that delusional, I guess, of a pick if you meet that, just because of their talent. And they don't have they might not have the coaching of Tom Izzo in Michigan State or Krzyzewski in Duke, but they have more talent than pretty much anybody. And for 6 games or 4 games in March, you know, that could play out. And they have a guy like Anthony Bennett who could put the team on his back. So if you pick UNLV in the Final 4, it doesn't look that ridiculous.
All right, Jeff. Did you get your assignments yet? Do you know what sites you're going to be at?
Yeah, I'll be at the first 4 in Dayton, and then I have the 2nd and 3rd rounds there. Originally, I was assigned to L.A., which I would have loved, but, you know, things happen. So I have to go to Indianapolis for that, for the Final 4. So I'll miss out on L.A. you know, hopefully UNLV ends up in Indianapolis. Maybe I can see them, find them entertaining. So I hope that happens.
Is that where, did Goodman swoop in and take that? I thought I remembered seeing that on Twitter.
Goodman was going to swoop in, and then he decided not to. And then Gary Parish had to do TV out there. So, you know, that's the precedent over me doing LA. I was kind of distraught, but you know, I guess I'll get over it.
Man, seniority.
I know. Unbelievable.
All right. Well, maybe we'll see you out there on the road. Like I said, you can follow Jeff at on Twitter at Jeff Borzello, B-O-R-Z-E-L-L-O. Read his stuff there at bustingthebracket.com. And yeah, take care, man. Thanks for coming on. Sit down, get comfortable. Part two of the Rebel Room. I am still UNLV beat writer Taylor Byrne, and now on the line from SI.com and coming to us, I believe, from the great state of Colorado, Mr. Andy Glockner. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine, and that is 100% correct. The east side of Denver, to be more specific.
Yeah, I saw a pretty nice barbecue photo from earlier.
You got to drop the food porn in every now and again just to get the people all riled up. It's funny. There are very few things that create more discussion than sports, and specifically NCAA tournament bracket stuff. But I think food may be one of them.
Oh yeah, it's definitely better for the year round conversation, because not a lot to talk about brackets in August. But you'll find that right now it is basically one and two, at least in my Twitter feed, about what people will still be talking about.
I would agree with that.
Like I said, you can find Andy Glockner on SI.com, college hoops and soccer, if that's your thing. Follow him on Twitter at Andy Glockner, GLOCKNER. And despite having a few more followers than our part one guest, CBS Sports Jeff Borzello, he is verified and you are not. What's up with that?
You know, I really don't know. He gave me grief about that when it happened. I was actually stunned. I thought you actually had to be a credible person to get a check mark, but that shakes my confidence in the entire Twitter model, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, anybody can get verified, I guess.
Yeah. No, look, I don't know what the process is. I don't worry about it. Weirdly, and I'm not encouraging any of your listeners to do this, but I actually don't have any fake accounts that stalk me. So maybe Twitter doesn't think there's any reason to verify me, because there's really no confusion.
Yeah, your fake account, what would it even be? Just somebody tweeting every minute of the day?
Yeah, basically,
would that be the best way?
A heavy tweeter making really stupid soccer references that don't really apply to basketball. Yeah, it'd be awesome. Man, maybe that's why I put up such a wall that nobody can actually do it.
All right, and Andy has been, let's see, I know you were at a home UNLV game last year. I can't remember for sure if you've caught one this year.
Yeah, I made the Northern Iowa game, actually. Nothing in Mountain West play, but I was there for the December game.
That was a rough one for me. I'm a UNI fan, and I was just hoping they'd put up
a
fight.
They didn't play well at all.
No, that was real bad.
Yeah. I mean, look, but it was a good performance by UNLV also, and it sort of encouraged us to think maybe a little bit more was coming, but then, you know, the Moser injury and all the other roster shuffling, and it's, you know, maybe it's just starting to find itself now as, you know, patience is not a big thing for sports fans. And, you know, I'd spoken to Dave Rice a number of times through the season, and, you know, he wasn't going to come out and say it, but, it, you know, I don't think this team has been that far behind the curve that was really reasonable given all the challenges they ran into. But that's not the way the fans want to think, because they have a lot of talent.
Yeah, to me, like the ones that are counter to that argument is like losing at Fresno State when you're clearly the better team. And there's no reason to not show up, and that's the glaring one. You know, the Boise State, I think that happens. You know, that was a team fighting for its NCAA life even back then, but then also to follow up Fresno with you know, the next road game being Air Force, which Air Force is a good team. I mean, you saw, I believe you were at the Michael Lyons 45-point game, right?
I was, yeah, but yeah. I've seen Air Force several times. They're only an hour south of me, and they're just a different animal at Clune, for sure. And and look, UNLV is a different team on the road, as a lot of Mountain West teams are. But the thing that concerns me about UNLV is this is now a two-year pattern of this type of behavior on the road, at least in conference play. And we're not going to get a chance to see anything more from them the rest of the season. They have one road game left at Nevada. Is that right?
Yeah, Saturday.
And that's it. They're hosting the conference tournament. They don't have any other challenging road games. So they're going to go into the NCAA tournament. We're just not going to have any more belief that they really can handle themselves outside the Thomas and Mack Center than what we currently have, which frankly is not that much.
And I honestly, I'm not chalking up Saturday as a win.
we know better than that.
Yeah, I'm serious. You know, like because when you have guards like Burton and Story, who you know they could just go off. You know, like you just can't tell. And I also, you know, just because UNLV went and destroyed a JV Wyoming team, that you know I give them credit for taking care of business in that one. It was boring, a tough game to watch, and that's exactly what it should have been from UNLV's perspective. But that doesn't make me believe that they're all of a sudden, you know, going to go
out
and be road crushers.
No, I don't take anything away from that game at all, to be honest with you. Yeah. You know, you're playing a Wyoming team without its two legitimate Division I caliber players. And from what I gather, Nance was under the weather, too, I think, wasn't he?
Yep.
I mean, like, come on. I mean, when a team basically doesn't have its three best players, I'm not going to give you any credit for going up there and winning a boring road game. That doesn't show me anything, to be honest.
I agree. Checking out your bracket watch, which came out on Tuesday. Tuesday on SI.com. And you've got UNLV as a 6 in Salt Lake City. And so, some of the other brackets, and I think most of them besides you are at a 5 right now. And there's actually an interesting take. I was just talking to one of my coworkers. He said like a Vegas-centric guy, Todd Furman, is putting something together on just what Vegas would rank them, and has UNLV as an 8. You know, just kind of an interesting different look. What would it take for UNLV? Let's throw out a hypothetical, and obviously it depends a lot on what other teams do. Everybody should know that. But if they were, let's start it. If they win out, last 3 regular season games, and then 3 Mountain West tournament games, which would include, you know, probably a victory against either New Mexico, San Diego State, Colorado State, probably 2 of those 3. What are they looking at as a ceiling for a seed, do you think?
You know, I hate trying to answer that question because of what you said, which is we can't evaluate this in a vacuum.
Yeah, there's so many variables.
I can't simulate in my head 1,000 remaining games for the season, you know, and then say what UNLV's potential is and what the committee would think of that type of late surge. You know, I mean, what is your gut impression? I mean, could they get up to a 5? You know, something in that range.
Borzello actually
it would depend on the bigger mandate as to what the committee thinks about the Mountain West.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are they going to value, because all you're looking at with UNLV now, even with that type of a profile, is you've beaten San Diego State at home, you've beaten Colorado State at home, you beat New Mexico at home. You did win at San Diego State, so you have the one good road win. And I guess you won at Cal, which is now looking a lot better than it did when UNLV played there. But basically all your big wins are coming at home. You know, and the conference tournament's going to be at home. So I don't know that they would get a tremendous amount of credit for winning a couple more games at home when everybody knows they can do that. So, yeah, I mean, I think the profile would add up pretty well, and there's a lot of, you know, room to move around in the 4, 5, 6, 7 range in the bracket right now. I think there's a significant drop-off midway through somewhere around the 4 seed line. I think UNLV could rise a couple seed lines, but I wouldn't get excited about it and say they could become like a 2 or a 3 or anything. I don't think that's reasonable.
I think Borzello threw out a fringe possibility of sneaking onto the 3 line and even, you know, more sturdy if they would win out on the 4. I'm personally not sold for the reasons that you were talking about. Like I get the impression from just people who have been at the mock selection committee, and have you been to one of those?
I was a couple of years ago, yeah.
Okay, and it just seems like they put a lot of importance on the road neutral victories, which, like you said, UNLV's last chance to get one more of those is Reno, who's not even close to a tournament team, and so it doesn't really add to the profile a whole lot. And all the teams that they could beat in the Mountain West tournament would be not technically on their home court because they bring in a different court, but in their home arena, and it's teams that they've already beat in their home arena. So
yeah.
It's, you know,
I mean, the last credible thing that the committee can look at that UNLV would have done on the road is the win at San Diego State.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, they're not going to give you credit for winning at Wyoming against, you know, a Division III level team, and you're not going to get credit for beating a Nevada team that's outside the top 150.
Yeah. I think but before the season, you wrote an article about UNLV talking about how the point guard playing, specifically Marshall, was going to be just kind of the key to what they would be able to do this year. And I'm curious, you know, from that perspective and just kind of watching them this year, that's he probably takes more crap from fans, I think, throughout the whole year than anybody else. And so I'm curious what you think of it, because he's not a pure point guard. Everybody knows that. And so he's tried to assimilate to the role, and his level of success depends on completely your opinion, I think, because there's cases to be made on both sides.
Yep. I think when you're thrust in that position, especially when you've got so much talent around you, and honestly, one of the biggest questions about UNLV always is its shot selection and shot distribution. Mm-hmm. You know, there are games, I forget which one it was, a couple of games ago, where, you know, Caden Reinhardt took twice as many shots as Anthony Bennett. I mean, with all due respect to Caden, that's ridiculous. That should never happen. So the question is that a function of just the free-flowing offense? Is that a function of Reinhardt being overconfident? Is that a function of Marshall not distributing the ball properly, you know, in the right way and working it inside out in the half court like Dave Rice says he likes to do? But often you see, a quick trigger from the perimeter kind of thing. I think it's complicated because Marshall, at least from a percentage standpoint, is their best perimeter shooter also. So it's a weird balance for him to be the guy that's supposed to orchestrate the offense, have two guys like Dijon Jones and Reinhardt who are trigger happy, and also be the guy that probably is your best perimeter shooter. So I think statistically he's had a pretty good season. I think he's had a tough role, but I can understand UNLV fans' frustrations in kind of looking at it and putting the blame on sort of the head of the monster when the monster is not acting like it should, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's definitely the case. And his numbers are great when you look at like assist to turnover, all that type of stuff. I mean, Caden and Bryce, they commit way more turnovers percentage wise, and they're not handling the ball nearly as much. And turnover is actually a big. And I've talked about it quite a bit in the last couple of weeks, but that's become a problem lately. That, you know, Dave addresses a little bit, but I don't feel like I see enough people kind of talking about, and they've averaged 17.3 turnovers over their last three games, all wins. You can't really do that against a team that you don't know as well, and that is going to be like, you know, I think in a tournament environment, that's something that an opponent is going to see as a weakness and just try to use that to exploit you. And
I would agree with that. I mean, we joke around sometimes that guys are better seen and not heard, or vice versa. I think Marshall is one of those guys that's having a season that's better for, you know, ESPN GameCast. Like, if you never watched UNLV play, you would think that Marshall's having a tremendous season. All the numbers look good. The assist-to-turnover ratio, as you said, looks good. You know, he gets to the free throw line. He makes shots inside the arc. He can get to the rim. He's a good perimeter shooter. He's playing heavy minutes. And generally speaking, the team is playing pretty well. But when you watch it, it's not nearly as fluid as that. And, I think that's what you were getting at.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's actually a good analogy from that. And just looking at the Mountain West overall in the NCAA tournament picture, I believe you have, do you have four teams in your last one?
I had five. I had Boise making it this week.
You did?
I did. I think they were in the first four game.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah, they just snuck in as one of the final at-largest.
Gotcha. And so, you know, how realistic do you think that is right now? Like, how much work does Boise have left to do to get in your opinion?
I said last night on Twitter, I think Boise State is two wins away from making it. And that includes the Mountain West Conference tournament, because their remaining schedule is Colorado State at home, UNLV on the road, San Diego State at home, and then they're probably going to wind up, I guess they could be the six, but you know what I'm saying? They're going to play a good team in the quarterfinal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think if they split those games, if they go 8-8 in the league and then get to the semis, or if they go 9-7 by winning the two home games, and, you know, then it'll be interesting to see, you know, can they lose a quarterfinal and hold on during, you know, the last, you know, 24, 48 hours of championship week and hold on to an at-large. I think what this speaks to, the Boise State question, and if your listeners follow me on Twitter, they know I've been talking about New Mexico a lot lately. I think this is going to be an interesting mandate on the Mountain West, a league that has done everything right in order to make itself regarded as a heavyweight conference this year. Went out and scheduled decently in non-conference, won a ton of games, has a number, two conference RPI or non-conference RPI, has five teams in the top 50, doesn't have a really bad team at the bottom. But yet, I don't know that it's going to get the respect it deserves because there's not an elite team in the league. And I think New Mexico is a very good team, but they're not going to get the same respect as an Indiana or Michigan or Duke or whatever you want to say. So at the top, are people going to value what New Mexico has done, stringing together a bunch of wins in a really, really good conference, you know, high teens or maybe even 20 top 100 wins if they win out for the rest of the season? And will the fifth-place team in that league get the same type of respect that it would if it came out of the Big Ten or if it came out of the ACC? Because I think in a league that's the number two-ranked league, a team that goes 500 and has the quality of wins that Boise State would have, plus a non-conference road win at Creighton, which is an impossible place to play.
Yeah, nobody else has got that one.
Yeah, I mean, how does that team not get in that large bid if they finish 500 in the number two conference? You know, just take the names off of it and take Mountain West off of it and take Boise State off of it. And plus, Boise should get a little bit of injury credit, too, because they had guys in and out of the lineup. You know,
yeah.
They're fully healthy by the, you know, by the NCAA tournament. That should be considered as well. So I'm interested to see what would happen with Boise State, because I think that'll be an interesting mandate on what the nation at large and committee thinks of the Mountain West.
Yeah, you mentioned New Mexico. I mean, the profile is just from, I'm looking at theirs right now. Number two RPI, number two strength of schedule, have 16 top 100 wins already. And like you said, could add more to that. 24-4, just beat San Diego State at home last night. And this is a team, you have them as a two seed. Most everyone else, when I'm looking around at CBS, ESPN, some of the others, have them at three, and I think there might even be one still at four. But what do you see? I think it's going back to your point about, you know, this will tell how the committee views the Mountain West, mm-hmm. because this is a tremendous profile that I think even if New Mexico had kind of a breakout star, that would get more attention. But because they're mostly just kind of a complete team, Kendall Williams scored 46 the other night, but that was, you know, a complete aberration. A game you were at. Yeah, man, you've seen some really poor Colorado State defensive performances.
Yeah, I saw the two epic implosions. It was great. to answer your question, I think New Mexico is a really complicated team to evaluate. I don't think either of us think that New Mexico is one of the four or five best teams in the country. And maybe that's short-selling them, because, like you said, there's no flash to what they do. But when you look at what elite teams are supposed to do, and again, New Mexico, their schedule has been so difficult that without any soft games to really pound on teams, that their scoring margin, even adjusted for schedule, is much, much lower than most of the elite teams in the country. Most of the elite teams win their games, you know, schedule adjusted by 16, 17, 18 points a game. New Mexico's at 10. So you have to take that with a grain of salt and see, you know, because that's one of the leading indicators on team quality is margin of victory.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at that's what impacts their advanced metrics, the Sagarin ratings, the Pomeroy system, you know, have New Mexico somewhere in the 20s. I think the BPI, the ESPN thing, I think now has New Mexico at 15. So none of that implies that they should be a one seed or even a two seed. But then you go through their resume in the traditional fashion, which the committee looks at very heavily, 16-4 against the top 100, 8-3 against the top 50. They're going to win the number two or three, whatever it is, ranked conference by multiple games. And if they win the conference tournament also, they're a double champion of that league. And I've been asking on Twitter all week, what profile from a major conference, if it had those credentials to it, doesn't get a one seed, let alone a two. So I think there's a significant gap here between the quant perspective and the eyeball test on New Mexico, for whatever reason, and the quality of their profile, and that's being played out in the debate leading up to Selection Sunday.
I agree. I'd like to think that that being the, you know, the number two or number three, like we said, conference in the league would mean something come Selection Sunday, because otherwise what was all that scheduling for? What was all that success for? But I do I've been saying basically since league play started that this league would only get four teams in. I hope I'm wrong. I hope Boise State gets in there, but I would not be surprised to see them left on the outside and to see seeding not work out quite the way teams would prefer.
I think that's possible. And then the question is, why is that the case? And you see, you know, again, the people on Twitter and even the Seth Davises of the world are not on the committee. So let's separate the two.
Mm-hmm.
But you see phrases like overinflated RPI or not as good as what their paper resume says. Well, who are you to say that? Like, why is the Mountain West suddenly not able to have five good teams in it? or seven good teams if Wyoming were healthy. That's what I don't get here. I'm a little bit biased because I live in Denver and I've seen the teams live and I watch the league a ton on TV. That's what I don't get. If this were the ACC or if this were the Big 12, nobody would be griping about this. Everybody would just assume these teams are good. But here, everybody assumes these teams are frauds, and that part of it I don't like.
Do you think tournament success has something to do with that? Like the fact that they got four in last year, but I think three lost their first game, and then nobody made the Sweet 16.
Yeah, they have two wins out of the four teams last year, whatever it was.
I think it was just made it. I think it was just one game. One.
Yeah, it was something like that. The Mountain West needs to have a good March. There's no way about it. The committee is not supposed to consider past years when they do evaluations of current years. But look, there are 10 human beings in the room. You know, these are not machines with complete 100% lack of bias. So they've seen what the Mountain West has done in the NCAA tournament. But even that argument, I think, is a little bit weird. Because San Diego State made it to the Sweet 16 when they were two, right?
Yeah, that was the 34-3 year.
BYU almost went to the Elite Eight, even though they lost their center. You know, so the really good teams that came out of this conference haven't done that badly. They lived up to the seeds that they got. So, you know, I mean, New Mexico a couple of years ago was a three seed, and they got thrashed in the second game that they played. But that team, I think, was overrated. I thought they were extremely lucky throughout the year. I don't feel the same way about this one. And I've seen them in person often enough just to see what they're all about. And I think Alex Kirk's emergence as a scoring option, him pairing with Bairstow in the front court, gives them a really big physical front court that a lot of teams don't have. They can stretch you because Kirk can come out and shoot the three. They've got, you know, we haven't talked about a guy like Hugh Greenwood, you know, the consummate glue guy who can hurt you. We haven't talked about Tony Snell, a guy who can explode for 20-plus points and is an athletic freak on the wing. So, you know, like you said, there's no star. But the fact that New Mexico can hurt you in so many different ways on both ends of the floor, I think, makes them very formidable.
I know I got a lot of crap for this from my followers when UNLV played at New Mexico, and that was the first game of league play for them. But I love watching New Mexico play, and they are, I was confident saying it then and now, they are a clearly better team than UNLV. Like a lot of fans didn't want to accept that just because if you just look at it, talent or athleticism, things like that, you know, like the teams like San Diego State and UNLV are still at the top of that. But New Mexico, Colorado State, like those are just really, really great, really, really good, maybe great teams to watch. And I love watching them.
I enjoyed watching the New Mexico-Colorado State game. I mean, look, the Kendall Williams explosion was unreal to watch in person. But the probably the most entertaining part of that game was watching 40 minutes of Kirk and Colton Iverson go after it. That was nuts. It was like watching like two brontosauruses slamming into each other. It was amazing. You know, so there are dynamics of those teams that you mentioned. Colorado State, a relentless rebounding team, all seniors, very physical, very good coach. Yeah, I mean, you see the themes here. You know, New Mexico, physical, concentrates on defense, has multiple weapons that can hurt you, good coach. Colorado State the same way. UNLV, you know, for all the talent, I don't think they really have that type of an identity. And for all the respect and, you know, and intelligence that Dave Rice has, he doesn't have that track record as a head coach either.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would agree with your assessment that I think those two teams that you listed are better teams than UNLV, but UNLV's talent is so potentially explosive and tantalizing that perhaps they have the, you know, the upside to beat an elite team that maybe a New Mexico or a Colorado State does not.
I would agree with that. So you think probably a 5-7 range is pretty squarely what UNLV's in right now, and that's, you know, what most like if they would. And I'm chalking up the last two home games as wins because I don't think there's any way they lose those. Even if they lose at Reno, lose in the semis, you think maybe a 7-8 in the worst case?
Yeah, I don't think they'll be wearing dark jerseys on the first weekend, if that's
okay.
The question.
Yeah.
I think they'll be safely in the top 8 seeds. It's just, you know, and UNLV fans know this because they've been stuck in the 8-9 game several times, you know, even when Lon Kruger was here. That's just not where you want to be. I mean, I think that takes away so much of the buzz of the season and all the anticipation, and you're watching Selection Sunday, and all of a sudden you're like, we're in the 8-9 game and we've got Indiana in the second round. You know, I mean, you're excited to have that opportunity, but realistically, your tournament's over the first weekend. You know, most often you're not going to win that game. So, you know, I think it's in the UNLV's best interest to try to get into that, you know, that six seed line, because then you can go after an 11, which is probably going to be one of the last at-large teams, rather than getting a, you know, a feisty mid-major 12 or 13 champion. I would always rather take the mediocre at-large if that's my option. And then you may dodge one of the top seven or eight teams in the country, and I think that's a big plus this year. Then maybe suddenly UNLV does pop up on the second weekend.
Of the four teams that were, you know, pretty sure or almost guaranteed are going to be in, New Mexico, Colorado State, San Diego State, UNLV, who do you think is just the most dangerous for a tournament run? Because everything's matchups, but just based on it right now, who do you think, maybe because they're more versatile, can beat you in more ways, who do you like to possibly go the deepest out of the Mountain West teams?
Well, I mean, New Mexico is going to have the best seed. You know, so that's a significant advantage. I mean, if they're a two seed, they're certainly, you know, favored to get to the Sweet 16 and maybe deeper. I like what I'm seeing from them because I think their offense is coming around. That's been the big question as to whether they can score enough. You know, if you drag New Mexico, and I think somebody ran the numbers yesterday, they're something like 10-1 in games that are 6 points or fewer. So they've had a lot of success in close games this year. And that's a dangerous trick to play in the NCAA tournament where one loss ends your season.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the way this team is evolving. I like the different weapons that they have. And they play with a little bit of a chip on your shoulder. I mean, I've seen multiple press conferences, both in person and then reading the transcripts, where Alford is constantly saying, we were not picked to win the league. We've been thinking about this all year. You know, so they're a little bit of an angry, feisty team on top of the fact that they're pretty versatile. I think Colorado State, with the right matchups, can beat some people. And I'm not giving up on San Diego State yet either. I think I was impressed by what I've seen from J.J. O'Brien the last couple of games. I thought he's really come on.
Yeah,
I think he's improved. And if he's better, I think that team is a lot better. They just have to get healthy. You know, they need to get Thames 100%. They need to get the guys, you know, shooting the ball. They shot terribly at the pit last night. If San Diego State finds its perimeter shooting stroke and guys like O'Brien and Side are playing well with Jamal Franklin, I think they're going to be a handful.
All right. Do you know where you're going to be for tournament assignments, or do you decide that after
the
bracket?
For your listeners, I will be spending the 6 days of championship week in Las Vegas.
Oh, very nice. So, so you'll get like the Pac-12 and the Mountain West tournaments like that?
Yeah, dude, I'm coming for the WCC final.
Oh, nice.
So I can hopefully see Gonzaga live because I haven't seen them yet this year. And then I'll be doing the Mountain West Wednesday, Pac-12 quarters Thursday, pick and choose Friday, Mountain West final Saturday.
Very
and
nice.
And then I'll be heading to Dayton and then quote-unquote North Texas for the first 2 weekends of the tournament.
No, wait, what's – oh, is Austin? Is that
where? Yeah, no, it's Arlington, Dallas.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can never remember these sites. But we'll
– it's at Jerry World.
Oh, God. That's going to be so weird. Like, I already don't like the regionals or things, just basketball in a football stadium. Because I've seen it at the Triple H Dome and Indianapolis when it wasn't the Final Four.
Right.
And it's just a weird – set up, and that place
dig it. But you know what, we bastardize like the major events in other sports too, like suddenly, you know, you play 12 minute half times in NFL games all season and suddenly you have 35 minutes, you know, at the Super Bowl, that kind of stuff. It's just part of the money aspect of it, I guess.
Yep, that's the way it goes. At least I understand the reasoning, like there is a reason to it, so can't argue with that, I guess. Follow him on Twitter, at Andy Glockner. Read him on SI.com. He's been all over the Mountain West this season. Like I feel like there's been a lot of national writers paying attention to this league all year, which I think just reflects that, you know, a lot of people would be not necessarily upset, but would be arguing for the league should it not get the seeding that a lot of people feel it deserves come selection Sunday.
Well, I think then it'll be up to the teams to go prove people wrong, and then maybe next year you benefit. I mean, the league is going to be good again next year. A couple of I mean, Air Force is losing a lot. Colorado State's losing all five starters, but New Mexico probably will be even better with the guys that they have coming in, and they're returning all five starters. Utah State's coming in. They're going to be healthy and better. They were a young, banged-up team this year. So I'm excited for the future of the league. And, I, you know, just from an enjoyment and living in this region, I'd like to see the teams do well in the NCAA tournament so they get that accord and respect next year.
All right. We'll look for you in Las Vegas coming up very soon. Andy Glockner, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot. Take care.